Chapter 83. Though he had been, and had been detected on the spot, in the most enormous falsehood that was ever said or done, he could hardly have been more disconcerted than he was when Mrs. Skewton plucked the shawl away, and Florence, pale and trembling, rose before him like a ghost. He had not yet recovered his presence of mind when Florence had run up to him, clasped her hands round his neck, kissed his face, and hurried out of the room. He looked round, as if to refer the matter to somebody else, but Edith had gone after Florence, instantly. "Now, confess, my dear Dombey," said Mrs. Skewton, giving him her hand, "that you never were more surprised and pleased in your life." "I never was more surprised," said Mr. Dombey. "Nor pleased, my dearest Dombey?" returned Mrs. Skewton, holding up her fan. "Yes, I am exceedingly glad to meet Florence here," said Mr. Dombey. He appeared to consider gravely about it for a moment, and then said, more decidedly, "Yes, I really am very glad indeed to meet Florence here." "You wonder how she comes here?" said Mrs. Skewton, "don't you?" "Edith, perhaps," suggested Mr. Dombey. "Ah, wicked guesser," replied Cleopatra, shaking her head. "Ah, cunning man. One shouldn't tell these things. Your sex, my dear Dombey, are so vain, and so apt to abuse our weakness. But you know my open soul very well, immediately." This was addressed to one of the very tall young men who announced dinner. "But Edith, my dear Dombey," she continued in a whisper, "when she cannot have you near her, and as I tell her, she cannot expect that always will at least have near her something or somebody belonging to you. Well, how extremely natural that is. And in this spirit, nothing would keep her from riding off today to fetch our darling Florence. Well, how excessively charming that is." As she waited for an answer, Mr. Dombey answered, "Eminently so. Bless you, my dear Dombey, for that proof of heart." Cried Cleopatra, squeezing his hand. "But I am growing too serious. Take me downstairs, like an angel, and let us see what these people intend to give us for dinner. Bless you, dear Dombey." Cleopatra skipping off her couch with tolerable briskness. After the last benediction, Mr. Dombey took her arm in his, and led her ceremoniously downstairs. One of the very tall young men on hire, whose organ of veneration was imperfectly developed, thrusting his tongue into his cheek, for the entertainment of the other very tall young man on hire, as the couple turned into the dining room. Florence and Edith were already there, and sitting side by side. Florence would have risen when her father entered, to resign her chair to him, but Edith openly put her hand upon her arm, and Mr. Dombey took an opposite place at the round table. The conversation was almost entirely sustained by Mrs. Skewton. Florence hardly dared to raise her eyes, lest they should reveal the traces of tears, far less dared to speak. And Edith never uttered one word, unless in answer to a question. Verily, Cleopatra worked hard for the establishment that was so nearly clutched, and verily it should have been a rich one to reward her. "And so your preparations are nearly finished at last, my dear Dombey?" said Cleopatra, when the dessert was put upon the table, and the silver-headed butler had withdrawn. "Even the lawyer's preparations?" "Yes, madam," replied Mr. Dombey. "The deed of settlement, the professional gentleman informed me, is now ready, and as I was mentioning to you, Edith has only to do us the favor to suggest her own time for its execution." Edith sat like a handsome statue, as cold, as silent, and as still. "My dearest love," said Cleopatra, "do you hear what Mr. Dombey says?" "Ah, my dear Dombey," aside to that gentleman, "how her absence, as the time approaches, reminds me of the days when that most agreeable of creatures, her papa was in your situation. ... I have nothing to suggest. It shall be when you please, ... said Edith, scarcely looking over the table at Mr. Dombey. Tomorrow? ... suggested Mr. Dombey. If you please. ... would next day, ... said Mr. Dombey, suit your engagements better. ... I have no engagements. I am always at your disposal. Let it be when you like. ... No engagements, my dear Edith. ... remonstrated her mother, when you are in a most terrible state of flurry all day long, and have 1,001 appointments with all sorts of tradespeople. ... they are of your making, returned Edith, turning on her with a slight contraction of her brow. You and Mr. Dombey can arrange between you. ... very true indeed, my love, and most considerate of you. ... said Cleopatra. My darling Florence, you must really come and kiss me once more, if you please, my dear. ... singular coincidence, that these gushes of interest in Florence hurried Cleopatra away from almost every dialogue in which Edith had a share, however trifling. Florence had certainly never undergone so much embracing, and perhaps had never been, unconsciously, so useful in her life. Mr. Dombey was far from quarreling, in his own breast, with the manner of his beautiful betrothed. He had that good reason for sympathy with haughtiness and coldness, which is found in a fellow feeling. It flattered him to think how he's deferred to him, in Edith's case, and seemed to have no will apart from his. It flattered him to picture to himself this proud and stately woman doing the honors of his house, and chilling his guests after his own manner. The dignity of Dombey and Son would be heightened and maintained, indeed, in such hands. So thought Mr. Dombey, when he was left alone at the dining table, and mused upon his past and future fortunes. Finding no uncongeniality in an air of scant and gloomy state that pervaded the room, in color a dark brown, with black hatchments of pictures blotching the walls, and 24 black chairs, with almost as many nails in them as so many coffins, waiting like mutes, upon the threshold of the Turkey carpet, and 2 exhausted negroes holding up 2 withered branches of candelabra on the sideboard, and a moldy smell prevailing, as if the ashes of 10,000 dinners were entombed in the sarcophagus below it. The owner of the house lived much abroad. The heir of England seldom agreed long with a member of the Phoenix family, and the room had gradually put itself into deeper, and still deeper mourning for him, until it was become so funereal, as to want nothing but a body in it to be quite complete. No bad representation of the body, for the nonce, in his unbending form, if not in his attitude, Mr. Dombey looked down into the cold depths of the dead sea of mahogany on which the fruit dishes and decanters lay at anchor. As if the subjects of his thoughts were rising towards the surface one by one, and plunging down again. Edith was there in all her majesty of brow and figure, and close to her came Florence, with her timid head turned to him, as it had been, for an instant, when she left the room, and Edith's eyes upon her, and Edith's hand put out protectingly. A little figure in a low armchair came springing next into the light, and looked upon him wonderingly, with its bright eyes and its old young face, gleaming as in the flickering of an evening fire. Again came Florence close upon it, and absorbed his whole attention. Whether as a foredoomed difficulty and disappointment to him, whether as a rival who had crossed him in his way, and might again, whether as his child, of whom, in his successful wooing, he could stoop to think as claiming, at such a time, to be no more estranged, or whether as a hint to him, that the mere appearance of caring for his own blood should be maintained in his new relations, he best knew. Indifferently well, perhaps, at best, for marriage company and marriage altars, and ambitious scenes still blotted here and there with Florence always Florence turned up so fast, and so confusedly, that he rose, and went upstairs to escape them. It was quite late at night before candles were brought, for at present they made Mrs. Skewton's head ache, she complained. And in the meantime Florence and Mrs. Skewton talked together, Cleopatra being very anxious to keep her close to herself, or Florence touched the piano softly for Mrs. Skewton's delight, to make no mention of a few occasions in the course of the evening, when that affectionate lady was impelled to solicit another kiss, and which always happened after Edith had said anything. They were not many, however, for Edith sat apart by an open window during the whole time in spite of her mother's fears that she would take cold, and remained there until Mr. Dombey took leave. He was serenely gracious to Florence when he did so, and Florence went to bed in a room within Edith's, so happy and hopeful that she thought of her late self as if it were some other poor deserted girl who was to be pitied for her sorrow, and in her pity, sobbed herself to sleep. The week fled fast. There were drives to milliners, dressmakers, jewelers, lawyers, florists, pastry cooks, and Florence was always of the party. Florence was to go to the wedding. Florence was to cast off her mourning, and to wear a brilliant dress on the occasion. The milliner's intentions on the subject of this dress, the milliner was a Frenchwoman, and greatly resembled Mrs. Skewton, were so chaste and elegant that Mrs. Skewton bespoke one like it for herself. The milliner said it would become her to admiration, and that all the world would take her for the young lady's sister. The week fled faster. Edith looked at nothing and cared for nothing. Her rich dresses came home, and were tried on, and were loudly commended by Mrs. Skewton and the milliners, and were put away without a word from her. Mrs. Skewton made their plans for every day, and executed them. Sometimes Edith sat in the carriage when they went to make purchases. Sometimes, when it was absolutely necessary, she went into the shops. But Mrs. Skewton conducted the whole business, whatever it happened to be, and Edith looked on as uninterested, and with as much apparent indifference, as if she had no concern in it. Florence might perhaps have thought she was haughty and listless, but that she was never so to her. So Florence quenched her wonder in her gratitude whenever it broke out, and soon subdued it. The week fled faster. It had nearly winged its flight away. The last night of the week, the night before the marriage, was come. In the dark room, for Mrs. Skewton's head was no better yet, though she expected to recover permanently, tomorrow were that lady, Edith, and Mr. Dombey. Edith was at her open window looking out into the street. Mr. Dombey and Cleopatra were talking softly on the sofa. It was growing late, and Florence, being fatigued, had gone to bed. "My dear Dombey," said Cleopatra, "you will leave me Florence tomorrow, when you deprive me of my sweetest Edith." Mr. Dombey said he would, with pleasure. "To have her about me, here, while you are both at Paris, and to think at her age, I am assisting in the formation of her mind, my dear Dombey," said Cleopatra, "will be a perfect balm to me in the extremely shattered state to which I shall be reduced." Edith turned her head suddenly. Her listless manner was exchanged, in a moment, to one of burning interest, and, unseen in the darkness, she attended closely to their conversation. Mr. Dombey would be delighted to leave Florence in such admirable guardianship. "My dear Dombey," returned Cleopatra, "a thousand thanks for your good opinion. I feared you were going, with malice aforethought, as the dreadful lawyers say those horrid proses, to condemn me to utter solitude. Why do me so great an injustice, my dear madam?" said Mr. Dombey. "Because my charming Florence tells me so positively she must go home tomorrow," returned Cleopatra, "that I began to be afraid. My dearest Dombey, you were quite a bashaw." "I assure you, madam," said Mr. Dombey, "I have laid no commands on Florence, and if I had, there are no commands like your wish." "My dear Dombey," replied Cleopatra, "what a courtier you are. Though I'll not say so either, For courtiers have no heart, and yours pervades your farming life and character. And are you really going so early, my dear Domini? Apostrophe apostrophe, oh, indeed, it was late, and Mr. Domini feared he must. Is this a fact, or is it all a dream? Apostrophe apostrophe list Cleopatra. Can I believe, my dearest Domini, that you are coming back tomorrow morning, to deprive me of my sweet companion, my own Edith? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Domini, who was accustomed to take things literally, reminded Mrs. Skewton that they were to meet first at the church. The pang, apostrophe said Mrs. Skewton, of consigning a child, even to you, my dear Domini, is one of the most excruciating imaginable, and combined with a naturally delicate constitution, and the extreme stupidity of the pastry cook who has undertaken the breakfast, is almost too much for my poor strength. But I shall rally, my dear Domini, in the morning. Do not fear for me, or be uneasy on my account. Heaven bless you, my dearest Edith. Apostrophe she cried archly. Somebody is going, pet. Apostrophe Edith, who had turned her head again towards the window, and whose interest in their conversation had ceased, rose up in her place, but made no advance towards him, and said nothing. Mr. Domini, with a lofty gallantry adapted to his dignity and the occasion, betook his creaking boots towards her, put her hand to his lips, said, tomorrow morning I shall have the happiness of claiming this hand as Mrs. Domini's, apostrophe and bowed himself solemnly out. Mrs. Skewton rang for candles, as soon as the house door had closed upon him. With the candles appeared her maid, with the juvenile dress that was to delude the world tomorrow. The dress had savage retribution in it, as such dresses ever have, and made her infinitely older, and more hideous than her greasy flannel gown. But Mrs. Skewton tried it on with mincing satisfaction, smirked at her cadaverous self in the glass, as she thought of its killing effect upon the major, and suffering her maid, to take it off again, and to prepare her for repose, tumbled into ruins like a house of painted carts. All this time, Edith remained at the dark window looking out into the street. When she and her mother were at last left alone, she moved from it for the first time that evening, and came opposite to her. The yawning, shaking, peevish figure of the mother, with her eyes raised to confront the proud erect form of the daughter, whose glance of fire was bent downward upon her, had a conscious air upon it, that no levity or temper could conceal. I am tired to death, apostrophe said she. You can't be trusted for a moment. You are worse than a child. Child. No child would be half so obstinate and undutiful. Apostrophe, listen to me, mother, apostrophe returned Edith, passing these words by with a scorn that would not descend to trifle with them. You must remain alone here until I return. Apostrophe, must remain alone here, Edith, until you return. Apostrophe apostrophe repeated her mother. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.